You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Sixteen teams, one trophy. The NBA playoffs are here, and all roads lead to the finals. Will NBA champions like Jokic and Giannis dominate the playoffs again, or will emerging stars like Anthony Edwards and Jason Tatum solidify their names in NBA history? The playoffs are where legends are made, and TNT will make sure you don't miss a moment of the action. Tune in to TNT's coverage of the NBA playoffs presented by Google Pixel on TNT, True TV, and Max.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Big Suey, a podcast exclusive.
Risky move.
Just when you thought the show could not be more diluted.
Walk the plank.
Bam.
No more free Disney trips.
Now here's the marching band of nowhere.
Matey.
Fat face.
Dan's been stress eating.
And the habitual liar.
Stugatz can't be trusted.
The Big Suey.
Yo ho, yo ho, a pirate radio life for me.
Jessica, that's worst nightmare type stuff.
Jessica, you don't need to know anything about the Panthers.
You don't. That's true.
I heard you talking about him during the episode where you couldn't figure out how to say my name.
Yeah. Mm. Radko the Butcher.
Smetana. That's how we say your name.
The
Smetana.
Smetana.
Can you just say your name so that this could all be over?
I asked you yesterday, man. Just say your name.
Smetana.
Even held the mic so that it would be nice and clear.
Smetana.
She doesn't know how to say her name. Didn't we already?
Smetana.
I mean,
no.
I kind of don't.
How to say their own name.
She
yes.
does not know that's how to how say her name.
I know how my family has historically said it, but that's only within the last two like generations of Americans. So I think there's a correct way, which we don't say. And then there's like my family's way, which I do say. And I don't really know which one to go with, because I think if I said Smetana, my name would be Jessica Smetana, and that sounds awful. That's just a bad name.
Okay, well, we need to figure out if you're okay with my declaration last week that Whittingham should just be allowed to decide for everyone, that he cares more about this than is reasonable because he's broadcaster guy. And Whittingham, I think, has declared that you are not saying your name correctly, and you have now admitted that you are not saying your name correctly either. So where are we on a verdict? Are you good with Whittingham just deciding for you what it is that we are allowed to call you around here?
You on mean behalf mansplaining?
Of, yes.
This is a horrible start to her first day.
Yeah, I'm just calling her
Smetty. In a vacuum, he's right, but like, Smetty. If you say my full name, it just sounds terrible that way.
Right. Are you good with Smetty, by the way?
Oh my
I'm
God.
Fine with Smetty.
Boom.
Well, I think it's going to be Jess. I think that's
you should have told everyone your name is pronounced Jessica. Just to really throw them off.
Whittingham, what is your ruling? And we'll figure out later whether or not Jessica will allow it.
Generally, the broadcast rule is you pronounce it how someone wants it to be said. But I did spend 10 minutes on YouTube looking up the origins of Smetana, which is an Eastern European nickname. And not nickname or last name,
Christ.
but Smetana is the correct way. Thinking as well, what if I did this with everyone? Dan would be Lebertard because it's a French last name.
Yeah, you don't have to.
Cody would be Cote.
Yes.
Ruiz would be Ruiz. You do it with a Spanish TH at the end, like Ryan Ruiz. I would be Whittingham,
because
that's
him?
How they pronounce in the UK.
We have no HR department. Go for it. You can punch him.
Duchenne Mohil.
Do you see why I promoted him to deciding it for all of us? Like, he's doing this with great fluency and flexibility and facility.
How would you pronounce Adnan's name? Transition.
Adnan Burke is with us now. And we're delighted to see him. Look at him. Is he wearing a tux or the remnants of last night still on him?
Yep.
Because he gets so delighted by entertainment news. He's an old Hollywood guy. He's strange this way, Stugatz. Like, yes. He cares about all of this in a way that is fundamentally unreasonable.
The only thing he cares more about is Federer. I mean,
I'm not sure. So what do you care most about? If you can only choose one, you're only allowed to choose one, Adnan. Is it wrestling? Is it Federer? Is it baseball? Is it hockey? hockey? Is it there? It's a long list of things. Rank them for us, because Oscars and movies are right near the top.
It's like Sophie's Choice, Dan. I just couldn't. I mean, it's like choosing between children. But it's all in that potpourri. It's all in that grab bag of my truest passions. Movies / Oscars, Federer, baseball, hockey. It's all just jumbled up, depending on which way my brain is going that day.
All right. So before we get to Oscars and movie stuff that you're fired up about, though, Stugatz, I don't know if you were watching at all, but Padres-Dodgers felt like it was great. From another time.
Yep.
Such fun series in baseball. Regular season baseball doesn't matter like that. And part of it is something epic was happening in every game. Tatis is ridiculous. I don't even understand how he does any of what he's doing. He looks like he weighs 140 pounds.
I'd say what's happening is Tatis. That's what's happening.
But he might as well. I'll be up there using an actual whip to hit a ball 400 feet.
He's
an actual
great.
Whip, because yeah. It doesn't... You give me, Adnan, as someone who loves baseball history, understands the science of it. How does he go opposite field and pull pitches like that when he weighs like 19 pounds?
Yeah, it's ridiculous, Dan. And you're right to kind of mention him as a throwback, because he feels like a relic of the baseball we loved growing up. 80s baseball before they all became He-Men and all jacked up in the 90s and like looked like Lenny Dykstra. Like, it's like Tatis looks like that slender, smooth, slick fielding, and yet incredibly strong and powerful shortstop we all love. The fact that he made history, the fact he's the first shortstop to homer 3 straight games at Dodger Stadium. I said last year, Dan, that was his coming out party. Everyone fell in love with Fernando Tatis. This year we had that terrible injury, the subluxation of the shoulder, and you go, oh my God, why can't we have nice things? But thankfully he's come back. It took him a few games to get rolling, and now it's been incredible. I mean, it's phenomenal to see a player like him. I think he could be the best crossover star since Ken Griffey Jr. He's charismatic, he's electrifying, and most importantly, he's talented. And he steps up to the moment. I mean, that home run he hit off Bauer, and then looking back at his teammates and doing the Bauer shuffle as he crossed home plate, amazing. And it's one thing to have that flash and panache, but he delivers in the key moment. They came back from a 6-run rally last night. I mean, I flipped over after the Oscars and was riveted by the extra inning game. If only we could have every single one of these games like this, Dan. Baseball, it's a reminder why it's the best.
I want to understand, because I don't understand it. You're talking about a guy, Stugatz, in Tatis, who has done something nobody's ever done. Jason Stark looked it up. 2 home runs one night against 1 Cy Young winner,
yep.
Kershaw.
Yep.
2 home runs the next night against the reigning Cy Young winner, Bauer. And what I want to ask you, it's never happened before.
Just 1 home run last night.
2 home runs, both of those guys, back-to-back nights. But the pitch that he hit, that he pulled off of Bauer, a 3-2 pitch, Bauer Cy Young winner, who showed you this offseason with HBO Real Sports, I can tell you what's coming, and you're not going to hit it. That's how much movement I have on my pitches. For him to throw a ball outside and for Tatis to pull it out with one hand to left center field at Dodger Stadium, where he weighs .166, Adnan, I've never seen it and I can't explain it. I don't understand. Is that bat speed? Like, what is that? How does that strength emerge from that size?
Yeah, we had a great breakdown the other day, Dan, with Dan O'Dowd and Bill Ripken talking about launch angle and the fallacy of launch angle and how everyone's so fixated on it. And it's not really about launch angle, it's about bat path. And that's the most important thing. I mean, going back to Ted Williams in his famous book, The Science of Hitting, he said, don't swing level, swing slightly up. But when you look at Tatis, he doesn't have this ridiculously long swing. He is just so quick to the ball. And as you said, he packs so much power and ferocity with it. It's back that Williams thinking of don't swing level, swing slightly up, but he generates so much torque. I think he does it with his legs. So often, as you know, baseball guys have to have that strong lower half. And I just think Tatis, when he's in sync like that, when he was struggling those first few games to start the season, then got hurt, came back, was struggling. He said he was just trying to do too much. He was trying to load up too much. I think because of the quicker swing, he's able to make more violent impact on the ball. But that backspin is amazing.
On the other side of that is Trevor Bauer, who does not mind the trash talking. That was refreshing to see. Like, Bauer, and it's really, what can you do when Tatis does that to you?
Oh, but it escalated. No, it escalated after that. They're now beefing because, you know, they're beefing, right?
I know they're beefing, but I'm good with that. And I think Bauer's good with it, too. He thinks it's good for the game, and I love that.
Well, all of that seemed fun, right? And they're playing an elevated height of baseball. Both of those teams are clearly excellent. The Padres are here to bother the Dodgers. Machado, you know, we were all wondering, well, what are they doing over there? And now we see, Adnan, like, that team can play with the Dodgers.
Matt Fassbender made a great point, Dan and Stu, the fact that they're still booing Machado in like the 11th. Like, it's his sixth plate appearance, and they're still booing lustily right now just because of the disdain for Manny Machado. And then with runners on, two runners on, he popped up to third. You're like, oh, man, Manny, how do you miss an opportunity like that? But, yeah, it has to be a rivalry when both sides are good. My fear was that first series, yeah, San Diego came to play, but the Dodgers are just better. Their depth offensively is better. Their pitching depth specifically is better. And San Diego is a much improved team. Maybe they're the third best team in the National League behind the Dodgers and the Braves, but they're not the Dodgers. Like, good luck beating the champions. For years, Yankees Red Sox have been such a joke as a rivalry. Well, the Yankees always win. The Red Sox are angry and they care a lot, but they don't win. The fact that San Diego was able to come back in this series spoke volumes to me. Because going in, I said, wow, if the Dodgers sweep the Padres, that would be a 9-game edge. Like, you could be talking lights out before May 1st. So the fact that San Diego showed that moxie, showed that fight, I think Darvish is perpetually underrated. I thought he pitched great. I thought Snell was good. And obviously the stars, the Padres stepped up. Those numbers were ridiculous, guys. I believe in 49 games this year, no team had come back from a 6-run deficit in the 7th inning on. Even in the history of baseball, again, as Matty V said, it was a 007. It's .07 winning percentage when your team is down that much in the last 50 years and the Padres came back. And I know the numbers crunchers can say it's only one win, but I've got to think, a win like that must be so energizing to a team who is trying to prove they belong with the big boys. To come back, you get your motor rivals like that, it's amazing. And to Stu's point about Bauer, yeah, I love the fact that he embraces not only playing the villain, but knows the game, like, no problem. Like, I'm normally the heel. This guy wants to bark in my face. Like, I'm good with that. I love that for Bauer.
I mean, you guys are wasting Adnan's time, though. It's a Monday night. He obviously has another job. And last night was the biggest night in movies. He cares about that so much. So quit wasting his time. I'll ask the first question. Oh, Adnan, presently, do the Florida Panthers have the best two players that have ever played for their franchise in Sacha Barkov and Jonathan Huberto?
Well, listen, Huberto I love, and Barkov is terrific. And both those guys are such offensively talented players. And Florida, listen, you guys know this. Coming to this season, you weren't sure what the expectations were. Coach Q needed a year to get under his belt, but Quenville's always been a difference maker, and I like what Florida's done. Bobrovsky, to me, was a concern. I just actually signed that massive contract. I said, all right, what about Bob? This could be a concern. But Florida's in a really strong division. I think all time, listen, Roy can tell you all about Scott Mellenby and a guy I work with all the time, Bill Lindsay. Bill Lindsay's still very much a part of the Florida Panthers broadcast, a great guy. So I'm going to say no, Mike, in terms of the all-timers, just because I love Billy Lindsay and Scott Mellenby. I mean, Mellenby's not obviously a great offensive force.
Wait,
but he's
a minute.
So, industrial.
Mellenby,
so
and
I would say no.
Mellenby and Lindsay?
Can we have a Florida Panthers discussion on this show that is encoded in 1996?
Come on, but Mellenby.
It's the only year we had.
And it's pronounced Huberto.
Why don't you
that's how he prefers it.
Scroodlin in there while you're at it, Adnan. Come on.
Oh, Brian Scroodlin. Yes. Still back the old halves, yes. Now, listen, Florida's a really good team this year. There's no question about it. But I just think, ultimately, it's going to be Vegas or the Avalanche, but good for Florida. I mean, they're having a strong season.
Why is he doing that? Why is he saying ultimately
it's
going to be?
I don't worry about other divisions. All I worry about is a central division presented by Discover, Adnan. You should get wise.
Vegas and Avalanche? Roy, you're going to let him say that? What is he? Why is he making it a foregone conclusion that it's going to be Vegas and Avalanche?
Well, sooner or later, because they have to reseed during the playoffs, they're going to have to play whoever in the third round because that's where they're going to reseed. So it might be tough. Playing the Colorado Avalanche and Vegas.
Wow, that is pathetic trash talk.
No, that is
you,
great
Roy.
Honesty by Roy. Roy is a diehard family. He knows what he speaks. Do not admonish him, Dan.
Roy, you've been waiting 25 years for your team to be any good, and you peter in with that? They're better, Dan. Sorry.
The Avs are pretty good.
Well, I'm a realist, Dan, so,
you've been talking about points leaders.
Roy, you got the best team
you've
in the league.
You've been talking about our team is the best team in the league, and then Adnan comes on, spits a little expertise at you, and you bow down and genuflect before Colorado?
Well, they were the best team in the league, but they are currently not the best team in the league, and Carolina kind of proven that during these last four games against them. But it's going to be tough sledding later in the playoffs. But I'm really looking at that first round series. If they play Tampa, they're definitely going to get out of there in seven games.
Roy, who won the last game against the Hurricanes? Who won the last game? Panthers or Hurricanes, Roy? Who won it?
That's right.
Panthers in overtime.
That's right. Sample size
first,
of one.
They lost the previous
recent,
six.
Michael.
Yes, they lost the previous six.
What have you done for me lately?
16 teams, one trophy. The NBA playoffs are here, and all roads lead to the finals. Will NBA champions like Jokic and Giannis dominate the playoffs again? Or will emerging stars like Anthony Edwards and Jason Tatum solidify their names in NBA history? The playoffs are where legends are made, and TNT will make sure you don't miss a moment of the action. Tune in to TNT's coverage of the NBA playoffs presented by Google Pixel on TNT, True TV, and Max.
Adnan, let's talk some Oscars here with you. David Sampson is very jealous that he is not allowed to spend any time in this space with us. He really likes the Oscars as much as you like the Oscars. But you, as a member of Metal Arc Media, and you as the guy who's doing Raw tonight and is a new wrestling famous person, a voice of the sport, you are the one who has been promoted to being able to talk Oscars around here. So I want to ask the audience this question, because I believe that this is where Fox News needs to lead off today. Have we reached a place at the Oscars where there's too much equality now? Too much equality, because I feel like what happened at the end there is, at the end it was just a bleep you from Hollywood. Look, the posthumous black guy, you thought all we're gonna win. Nope, we're gonna at very one last move here. We're gonna give it to the guy who is playing senility or might be old enough to be senile. We're gonna stun you with Anthony Hopkins. We're gonna throw it to Joaquin Phoenix, who loves the awkward, and then we're just gonna end the ceremony. Ha ha! Bleep off. Too much equality. Lowest ratings Oscars ever, right? Because people are going to be put off by the diversity. But it was present last night, and in a way that was really fun to see.
What is your question?
It was fun to see.
I mean, what is this?
If I did that, I mean, geez.
Is there too much equality? Is the question.
The question was clearly.
I don't think you have that much capital to say any of those things. Just stop talking, please. And your thoughts on last night.
Thank you, Mike. Listen, what Dan's saying is Oscar's so white. We've too much of overcorrection now. It's become too diverse for the average Fox News viewer. But listen, ultimately, the acting nominees, 9 of the 20 were people of color. And I would have argued it should have been 10 with Delroy Lindo for Defy Bloods. The movie only got one nomination, Terrence Blanchard, Spike Lee's longtime collaborator, for best score. But ultimately, you have history-making performances all over the place. Chloe Zhao, only the second woman ever to win best director and the first person of color. You got Yoo Young-jun, who is the first Korean woman ever to win an Academy Award. She's incredible in Minari. She steals the show as this grandmother who is profane and loves wrestling and is not your typical grandma helping her family assimilate. I was so happy she won. Very charming speech in which you mentioned Brad Pitt. Supporting actor Daniel Kaluuya for Judas and the Black Messiah. That was an absolute lock. But to Dan's point, two genuine shocks at the end of the night. And this is why I love the Oscars. And everybody can poo-poo the fact it felt like a small luncheon. I know it's too long and no one's seen these movies. And there's always so much complaining and vitriol thrown at it. Well, here's why people like me and Samson love it. Because if you love movies, you appreciate the fact that there's some genuine surprises and moments that you were not expecting. Chadwick Boseman losing Best Actor is an absolute stunner. My jaw hit the floor. They literally rejigged the ceremony, in my opinion, because they thought he was going to win Best Actor. We'll end on that moment, this posthumous award, a somber note. We appreciate his legacy, his genius, whether it was Jackie Robinson or James Brown or Black Panther. Here's a performance in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom we can all appreciate. So generally, they end with Best Picture. Steven Soderbergh, the great director producing, is, you know, let's mix it up. Let's go Best Picture before. We all know it's going to be Nomadland, which it was. And then we'll end with Chadwick Boseman. Great. Best Actress was the most competitive category going. I had Viola Davis winning because she'd won the SAG Award. But you could have made a case for Carey Mulligan, who won the Critics' Choice Award. You could have made a case for not only Vanessa Kirby, but you could have made Andra Day, won the Golden Globe for United States for Billie Holiday. Instead, Frances McDormand wins. I'm like, all right, third Oscar for Frances. If you'd asked me in September, she was a favorite. She ended up being a dark horse last night. And by the way, when Nomadland wins Best Picture, she lets out a wolf yowl, which is gotten lost today because Glenn Close's butt dance deservedly has been the headliner because it was such a great moment. But Frances McDormand doing a wolf yowl was amazing, followed by her bemused, brilliant husband, Joel Cohn, just giving a slight kind of like, yeah, that's Franny for you. Just gave a wolf yowl when she won because there was a wolf who was on set during Nomadland that was their friend. But best moments, Glenn Close's butt dance, obviously, Frances McDormand's yowl, but Anthony Hopkins winning, guys, that's a great moment. That's why you love the Oscars, because you say, wow, I did not see that coming. I guess the BAFTAs were onto something. The British Academy Awards nailing the fact that Hopkins would win. Dan, you pointed out the fact his performance as a man who's senile. I've got to tell you, his last scene in that movie is as good as screen acting gets. And if you're asking me impartially who should have won, my vote would have gone to Riz Ahmed for Sound of Metal. I love that film. I love everything about his performance. But if I had a second choice, it would have been Anthony Hopkins. That is King Lear on the edge of ruin. It won for the Academy Award for screenplay. It's a brilliant film. I never want to see it again because it's so devastating, showing mental illness and the fact that Hopkins is all over the place. One minute he's brash and he's funny and he's loud. And then one minute he's not sure where he is, and it's disconcerting and it's sad. And then it's heartbreaking. And it really is a genuinely great performance. But I think the Academy was stunned. They thought it would be Boseman. And here's what else sucked. Hopkins wins, but he's not even there. So you have this shocking win. Normally when Moonlight won Best Picture, which I called at the Academy Awards at Ben Lyons backstage, you had the frenzy of like, oh my goodness, Jeremy Kleiner from Plan B is stunned. I've actually won. Hopkins was in England. He's in Wales. All right, great, I won. Mic drop. It's been fun. What a weird night.
I need to see if everyone just had the same experience that I did on the Zoom, because Adnan is a bit of a crazy person about the movies, okay? Mm-hmm. And what just happened as he was talking about this was we visually saw him prowling and pacing all over his apartment as if his energy could not be contained by sitting on a couch. And so what you just got was a rat-a-tat-tat blast of sleeve of bullets on Rambo's knee as he falls to the ground, and he just shot all over the place, everything that he had on the Oscars, and he's got plenty more. He's a crazy person. So who was better? Who was simply better? Was the performance? I need you to take a position
on
this.
Thank you, Dan. Yeah, Boseman or Hopkins?
Well, you're telling a Sound of Metal, but you're saying flatly Hopkins. The guy who got it is the guy who deserved it. The guy who played Senility.
1,000%. Listen, again, if you're asking me who I would have picked, I'm picking Riz Ahmed. But Hopkins or Boseman, definitively, no questions asked. It's Hopkins. It's an incredible performance.
Give me all of the analysis that you have, please, on Glenn Close's The Butt Dance. She is the biggest loser in the history of the Oscars for a great actress, right? She is Charles Barkley of acting, correct?
I would say Susan Lucci, who famously lost, 18 times for daytime Emmys. But yes, Glenn Close, 0-for-8. And by the way, of all the acting nominees this year, Hillbilly Elegy, her nomination for that was absolutely atrocious. She is clearly a wonderful person, a magnetic personality, a great actress going back to Fatal Attraction. But that movie was one of the worst films of the year, and her performance was wretched. It was just loaded in latex and had every Southern fried cliche you could imagine. It was preposterous that she was nominated. She stole a nomination away from Olivia Cooke for Sound of Metal. Not that it's her fault. This is what the Academy does. But my great fear was, oh my God, Glenn Close has never won. So this is the makeup call. They're going to give her an Oscar for Hillbilly Elegy, a horrific film. But hey, you're due and you're 0-for-8. Pacino famously won in his 8th nomination for Scent of Woman. Okay, Glenn Close finally will give you one. Thankfully, they did not. But credit to Glenn Close. She gives us the most indelible moment of the night in a segment in which they're doing trivia. And you say, what is this? Is this time filler? This is falling flat all over the place. And by the way, shout out to Questlove, who's also one of the great heroes of the night. He was fantastic. But you're wondering, what the hell is this segment? Why are we doing this? This is falling flat. Kaluuya's not interested. It's not funny. And then thankfully, Glenn Close saves it. Now, maybe we can be suspicious. Maybe somebody fed her Spike Lee's School Days. But I'm going to say no. I thought it was a genuine, authentic moment. Certainly, that dance was improvised. Nobody was expecting Glenn Close was going to do a butt dance, harkening back to Spike Lee's college film, 1988 School Days. Remarkable moment for a great actress who was nominated for a terrible movie.
So, Adnan, I need to ask you this, because we are in a bad place in terms of what just happened. You are a fundamentally decent person. You have ravaged this movie with the words wretched, preposterous, horrific, and terrible.
Right.
It is a savaging that it just seems fundamentally against everything you are as a positive light in the world.
At least Scent of a Woman was a good movie.
A terrible, yeah. Wretched, preposterous, horrific. Where has this side of you been? We need more of this in the next incarnation of your movie podcast where you are too fundamentally decent. What the hell? Wretched, preposterous, horrific, and terrible for Glenn Close? What are you doing?
Cinephile, coming soon to Metal Arc Media, and that is going to be the goal, Dan. A lot of people are asking, what is this latest iteration? You've done 175 episodes. You've done it for ESPN and Kane's 13. Why are you joining on the pirate ship? What exactly are you going to unveil? And I think we gave everyone here just a slight glimpse. It's going to be unlikable Adnan. It is going to be angry Adnan. It is going to be furious and outraged Adnan. Wow. Because there are moments that see movies like this and it appalls me. And somebody might rightfully say, well, why do you care? Like, how is this impacting your day? It does, because guys like me and Samson care so much. And when I see somebody nominated for a film that is beneath them, quite frankly, it's personally upsetting to me. Because if I was Glenn Close, I would want to deny the nomination. I would say, you know what? This is ridiculous, guys. I'm normally well-liked around here, but this shouldn't happen. I'm going to retract the nomination. John Larroquette, one of my favorite actors, Night Court, one of my favorite shows, 4 Emmys he won for Best Supporting Actor is Dan Fielding. Famously turned down the nomination. The fifth one is, you know what? I'm good. I've won 4 straight. Stop nominating me.
How about we do away with these Lifetime Achievement Awards with the Oscars? I'm serious. Like, just because you didn't win it the first 7 times doesn't mean you should win it the 8th for a bad movie. I'm tired of this. Seriously.
It's a great point, Stu. I've never understood this theory. They go, well, there's so many makeup calls. But why? Why does that happen? Like, Denzel Washington should have won for Malcolm X in 1992. It's one of the best performances of his life. But Pacino was long overdue, so he had to win for Sin of a Woman. So they go, all right, we'll give it to Denzel for Training Day. Well, Training Day is not his best movie. Are you kidding? Well, we've got to make it up for what happened 10 years ago. I'm with you. Eventually you go, hey, screw it. Mistakes were made. Let's just give the person who deserves it the most.
Yo, chicken thumb.
What's happening here? What do you mean? You agree with me. You're
tired of this. You've been monitoring the saddest Clinton-Boyce combinations over the years of your time. You fell asleep last night. You didn't even finish doing this in the Black Messiah. I know you. You have no idea what's going on in Hollywood.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
John Larroquette, Adnan, is one of your favorite actors.
I was a surprise. I'm not surprised at all. He's a very good actor.
Favorite guy. You're not surprised by John Larroquette being someone's favorite actor? Put it on the poll.
He's underrated.
Guillermo, at Le Batard Show, are you surprised that anyone's favorite actor is John Larroquette from Night Court? This devalues all of Adnan's other opinions on art and entertainment as he blisters Glenn Close. I've been disappointed, Adnan. This angry descent, this unhappy descent of Bill Maher into sort of this creature that is unctuous and arrogant and just a bit off-putting in his humor. But Bill Maher, I think, is right when he complains that the Oscars were so super sad in their movie choices this year, that everything was about being a better person and applying, this darkness, this film, to so much of the movie making. It was depressing. Like, the movies are depressing.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we go to the movies to have a sense of escapism, and I understand that in the year that we've all had, we'd like to go actually have a feel-good movie. There's something to be said for Little Miss Sunshine back in 2006. Did not win Best Picture, was nominated, lost to Scorsese's The Departed, speaking of a guy who was long overdue for Academy Award recognition. But I understand Maher's point, Dan, to say that, listen, we've had a horrible year. Can we just have a little bit of uplift? Can there at least be a couple of films that make us believe again in the human experience? But I don't think that that's on the Academy to say, okay, you know what? Let's try to find some fun movies. You look at the slate of films and say, okay, what is, in our opinion, which is deeply subjective, what is the most resonant? What is the most powerful? And Nomadland, the story of these nomadic migrants and a long-suffering woman who decides to just travel from place to place, lives this itinerant lifestyle because the pain is too much to handle. It's a beautiful film. So I don't think they should say, you know what, it was a little bit of a downer. Can we find something brighter? No, it's a great film. So it deserves that recognition.
Adnan, put us there when you found out that Roger Federer, at the age of 39, was once again going to play the red clay of Roland Garros.
Well, it's amazing, Stu, because as we all know, it's Rafa's home. And obviously he dominates the clay like nobody's business. But just to have Roger out there again, I mean, I'm going to start to get really emotional with you guys. As you know, Stu, I'm Stu Potty, whenever we talk Fed. And I know Andrew Brandt had the same reaction as I did, which is one of great emotion and just overcome, because this is one of the great artists ever. And to see him back doing what he does best, we don't know how many more opportunities we're going to have to see this. Even though I don't know how he'll fare, I'm sure he will not win the French Open, but he's won it once before, which is all that matters to me. And eventually what ends up happening is you just savor the greatness. One of my kids asked me the other day, do you think Michael Jordan should have come back with the Wizards? And I said, yeah. And he goes, but he wasn't as good as he once was. And I said, who cares? Like, it's his life. If he wants to go play, then he should play. And obviously Jordan was different. He had ownership stakes, et cetera. He was trying to sell tickets. But for Federer, even if he can't win championships anymore, it is still glorious to see him out there. And I wouldn't put it past him, by the way, to sneak out one more Wimbledon. But to see him back there, to put you in that place, too, it would involve a lot of blubbering and sadness. Happy tears, as they say.
It is strange. Would you not admit, Mike Ryan, that Adnan Virk, authentically weird, put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Lebatard Show, Adnan Virk, yes or no, authentically weird. It is strange that you care about the Roger Federer artistry so much that you will be emotional talking about it with us. Like, it's not even something that it's happened crazy. That you're holding back tears on the idea of, well, just talking about this is something that brings out the tissues. It's absurd. You're a professional. You're a broadcaster. You're the voice of WWE. How about you toughen up a little bit, Virk?
I think this is one of the reasons why, Dan, at ESPN, one of the great missteps of my life was they never allowed me as part of the tennis coverage. And I thought, you know, I've got such passion for it and I'll be authentic and I'll be a great teammate. They said, no, I think they could see through that veneer of kindness and respectability to see that I was just some giant fanboy. And they said, you know what? We're an actual business here. We can't possibly have this guy on air potentially blubbering if Federer wins or loses. Like, I'm sorry. You're not a professional. We can't
do
that.
Federer headbands at home when he's watching matches.
I don't think he understands. Do you understand how strange this is for a professional broadcaster to care this way about where you can't be trusted to be professional, that if ESPN put you on a tennis broadcast, you just start sobbing?
Or cheering.
It's unbelievably strange. Like, there's no way that you could bring that kind of caring to WWE wrestling. Like, you need to summon it, even if it's not real, you need to summon caring like that.
So you're telling me if there's a big shocking conclusion tonight, you want me to hold back tears on the air tonight on USA Network, Monday Night Raw? That's what we need, an injection of emotion from our announcer, not from the wrestlers, from the announcer getting choked up over a particularly difficult loss.
If T-Bar and Mace pull the upset over Drew McIntyre and Braun Strowman, waterworks, okay? Waterworks.
Okay.
That's a big win for T-Bar and Mace.
Listen, if the monster among men can be vanquished, Mike, you're right. Maybe that is a reason to get a little bit emotional.
Are you nervous at all? Or are you good now? You're such a professional broadcaster, Adnan, and there's great discomfort in the first couple of times, and they were weird doing it with teammates that you don't really know at all, don't know about chemistry. Hey, go out there and be great at this.
Are you talking about Braun Strowman and Drew McIntyre? Because that was the first time they teamed.
And so how do you get out there and do something like this tonight? With confidence? Are you now settled in more?
A little bit, Dan. I think ultimately every time out there you get a little bit more comfortable, but it really is a different world. As Mike Ryan knows, if you're locked in on this, you're good. But if you are coming as an outsider, then there's going to be a learning curve. So I'm tremendously grateful. I've had incredible teammates with Corey Graves and Byron Saxon who have been there to pick me up, who have been there to quickly correct mistakes, whatever I've done wrong. But I think it's going to take some time. I probably was a little bit foolish in thinking I could do this, you know, with reasonable success, at least out of the gate. It's going to take time, as I said. But I think each time out there, you get a little more comfortable.
Adnan, good talking to you. Happy to have you a part of what it is that we're doing. David Sampson is furious, though. He wanted to give his dorky expertise to this. He really did. He wanted to lend it in. And now you're an established voice. It's all changed around here, right? Where you used to have to breach security to get in here, but now you are a welcome member of what we're doing. And now Sampson feels like he's caught in the barbed wire and he really badly wants to give his Oscar opinions. And we don't have room for him because you saw, right? I wanted to put him on here with Adnan,
yes,
but Adnan takes up too much space. He's a ball hog. He gets to talking and wandering around. Did you even know you were wandering around your apartment? Did you know you were
I got so emotional right there. I couldn't wrap up all my energy. I had to leap out of my chair just to let you know how passionate I am about this. I still feel like I have a lot of meat on the bone, by the way. I ball hogged my way through 30 minutes. And I still feel like I have another 20
minutes
left.
All right, go ahead. Well, here, just give us rat-a-tat-tat here. Just give us the best of what you've got.
You want 20 straight minutes?
No, what I want is we are just going to shut up. We're going to move out of the way.
Yeah.
Adnan, go ahead. This is going to be rat-a-tat-tat, speed bag punching you in the face, but he cares about this deeply. So tell people everything you think from last night that you didn't get to, but don't kill us, all right? Because because you are a droning, yammering, emotional fool about this stuff, and if you could just end it with sobbing, that'll give us the end of the segment we need. If you could just reach Federer levels of sobbing by the end. Go ahead. Floor is yours.
If you, If you love movies, you love films, and you love clips of movies. One of the biggest missteps of last night was the In Memoriam segment did not actually show us the actor saying those lines. Who doesn't want to see Yaphet Kotto giving a line from The Running Man? Who doesn't want to see Michael Chapman, the great cinematographer of Taxi Driver and Raging Bull, on set with Scorsese describing one of their shots together? In Memoriam, to me, is one of those segments that I know people roll their eyes at, but it's important. You're honoring the legacy of these great artists. They went through that as fast as I talk. It was rapid fire. 2 seconds of this dead guy, 2 seconds of this dead woman. I'm like, are you kidding? And I recognize the fact, again, some of the lesser known lights do not get all the pub, but you've got to give me a line from Chadwick Boseman's Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. I want to honor these artists that passed away. Similarly, best actor, when you see the clips, you got to see the clips. They didn't show the clips. They just showed me Riz Ahmed. They just showed me Anthony Hopkins. They just showed me Gary Oldman. No, you got to show the clip of the movie. That's what makes people engaged. When they watch the Academy Awards, they go, well, you know what? I didn't see this movie, but that's a hell of a 20-second clip. When you watch movies, you say, oh, that clip is going to be at the Oscars. That's the one that won him an Oscar, or that won her a nomination. There was too much rushing and dragging at times. I said, listen, who cares if the ceremony's long? Every year I get, oh, I can't believe how long it is. Well, if you don't want to watch it, don't watch it. It's not for you then. It was 3 hours and 15 minutes, and that was without showing the clips. Lose the trivia segment. Lose some of the other nonsense. I'm glad we didn't have to suffer through Best Original Song. That always takes up way too much time. That was a great adjustment made by Steven Soderbergh. But show me the clips of the movies. That's why we get emotional. That's why we get passionate. That's why people like me blubber. I'm done.
Wow. 17 more minutes.
I feel like you've got more, but thank you for your time. And if you want more of that, I just can't believe. Do you guys understand what I'm saying? How weird it is to see him and hear him eviscerate something or someone? Like, he's such a decent, happy person, but he has no problem getting in there and being a total gas bag about the performance needed to be better here, and they needed to do this better over at the Oscars, and they needed to do this, and this was wretched, and he's just film critic galore, and you're a bit cruel. Got to admit it. It's weird to see this darkness emerge from you.
It's off-putting, but I understand the audience right now is still adjusting to me no longer being a heel on this program. So little by little, like an onion, we're peeling back the surfaces that I'm not as good a guy as you might imagine.
Okay, very good. Adnan, good way to end. Thank you for being on with us. We appreciate it.
Dan, Stu, you guys are the best. Love y'all.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Light spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Light, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.